Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another OC Spotlight, the one show, the only show that shows you the most incredible people doing the most amazing things. And today, we certainly have one of those with us here today. A firecracker. Maybe that's an offensive thing, but she's an explosive person here in Orange County. She definitely gets stuff done. I'm talking about Jane Herring from the World Affairs Council of Orange County. Welcome to our studio here, finally.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to finally be here.
We have tried to get you in here for so long because I love what the Foreign Affairs Council does and how you have taken it, which was a little sleepy organization, dare I say. I'm not going to be critical. And you've really put energy into it. You're a firecracker. You do light a fire under things here and make things explode. And we'll talk about some of the events coming up. Your numbers are exploding. More people are participating. I just think it's a great thing you're doing. So let's talk about you first.
Okay.
Your background. I'm going to pull up your bio. People can go to the worldaffairscouncil.org and find out about this Orange County chapter, because there are chapters all over the country, right?
Yes, and actually they're not chapters. We are all completely independent organizations.
I didn't know that. I figured you were all part of one parent group or something.
Well, we do have a national office. There is a World Affairs Councils of America office that's based in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Their mission is primarily only to focus on lifting us up and supporting us as we need to. Not every council contributes. Not every council wants to be part of that network, and that's okay. But we all existed before the National Council existed. There are some that go in and out that exist sometimes, and there's nobody to run them, and they go quiet. Others, some are completely volunteer-run. Some are fully professional. The two most successful and biggest ones are actually in Philadelphia.
Really?
In Dallas-Fort Worth. And they have fully huge groups of professional full-time workers. They play a big part in their communities. Ours, even though it existed since the 1960s, was primarily a social club.
Yeah.
For a membership organization for the who's who of Orange County. And that there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of our councils start that way. But there is a moment now where we have an opportunity to truly be of service to the county, to the community, and to really hone in on our mission to keep our community engaged in foreign affairs and why it matters.
And has there ever been a more important time to do that? We're recording this in early April as we go through, I'll try and be non-political here, but we're going through this war with Iran and people are wondering which way it's going to go and we're going to get pulled in and we're going to pull out. More than ever before, I hear foreign affairs on everybody's tongue. Where too many Americans are always, it's always been my criticism, who cares what happens to the rest of the world? Happening in my neighborhood, my county, my state, that's all that mattered to most people here.
I'm glad you say that because that's completely why the World Affairs Councils started. It was the very first council started in 1918. Think of that, over 100 years ago.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Because, and listen closely here, we had just come out of World War I, and the majority of Americans were saying, why are we sending our boys and our money and our resources to help other people? What
Absolutely.
Are we doing, right? And so in international
Very
relations.
Very isolationist. Terms, we
yes.
did that. We fought the war. No yes. more. We're out of it.
In international relations terms, we say blood and treasure. Why right. are we sending blood and treasure to other people? We need to stay focused. America first. We don't want to be in alliances. We don't want to be part of this international network. We need to stay inward. And there were people in the community that understood that in terms of the economy, in terms of national security, that is a very bad idea. And so in a nonpartisan way, they brought groups together with speakers, with experts to talk about what is going on in the world and why it matters, and thus became the original and ongoing mission of World Affairs Councils of America.
I can't think of a better mission here, and I had no idea it went back that far. And I don't know why. I've gone to many of your events and met top level. Just rattle off some of the names that you've had over the last year or two. You had
Admiral Stravitis, the former head of NATO. We had Admiral Rogers, the former head of the National Security
Agency. Both of whom were fascinating.
And cybersecurity. But it's not always military, although we have had General Petraeus in the last year and a half as well. But we also bring in experts in different fields. We've had top journalists from Ukraine for the Wall Street Journal. We have had ambassadors and other diplomats. We've had Pentagon officials. Actually, here, right here at the Innovation Center, we brought in some people working on the mind technology nexus in the next phase of defense, and finding different ways to not only bring the world to Orange County, but to uplift Orange County to the world and show what we are doing here that matters on the international stage. Look at what we're doing with our aerospace and defense companies here in Orange County.
Look, about, we're at UCI's Beal Applied Innovation Center. It's all about technology and trying to turn it into something. Most of it here is med tech and medicines. That's a huge international market. We dominate in those areas still here in Orange County and globally. Ophthalmology and drug development
but
and med tech.
But think about when you can connect the brain, when you can connect the eyes, when you can connect all of that internally to a defense system, an AI. What does that mean for this next phase of defense? We're already seeing, we have Anduril right here in our backyard, right?
I'm not sure even people know how big Anduril is. Palmer Luckey's latest lucky strike, so to speak, where he took his money from Meta and the Oculus things that he was doing, the virtual reality glasses and stuff here. And he's turned this into one of the biggest defense contractors now in the world. And he's putting all that technology into robotics and to robotic seaplanes and airplanes and all sorts of stuff here, partly as defensive measures and border security and stuff, and part of his offensive capabilities. To me, they're really cutting edge defense development here again in Orange County, like it was a million years ago.
And we explore the pros and cons of that. Right? Mm-hmm. We send a bunch of drones into a war, and okay, so less of our soldiers are being risked, but also you lose the human connection, you lose the empathy when it comes to war.
Who pulls the trigger? Who decides who lives and dies? Yeah, exactly.
When you put that divide, and this is a bigger conversation when it comes to AI and all this technology that we love to explore. Where is that disconnect? Is this good? Is this bad? And we don't give you the answers. Mm-hmm. We never give you the answers. We don't host platforms. We host conversations.
That's exactly,
and so
right.
We invite you to come into these programs and ask these questions.
I'll give you a couple examples of the kind of questions I heard. Who was the guy that was the head of cybersecurity?
Admiral Rogers, yes.
And at the end of his talk, because he ran cybersecurity, he was one of the first guys, I think, that ran the cybersecurity unit or something.
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, and somebody said, what do you fear about? We're all afraid of getting hacked, right? And every company in the world assumes they're going to get hacked, and how quickly can they find the intruder and fix the hole here? It's almost impossible to stop being hacked. It's how quickly you can react to it. And he said, wait till you get to quantum computing, where the computers can now do it at supersonic speed here. They're not just doing one calculation at a time. They're doing multiple things at the same time. Mind-blowing. And he said the quantum computing alone may allow hackers the capability to break just about every code out there. And I'm like, nobody's talking about that. Here
right.
we are, all businesses, all worried about this. And you say, why do I want to hear the head of the cybersecurity unit? Because he's telling you what's coming next and where the world is headed. And if we don't address these things and talk about them, become aware of them, we're going to be left behind, or we're going to be left in a lurch when all these things happen to us here.
And if you wait for the media to talk about it, it's already too late.
It's already too late.
If you wait for the government to talk about it, it's years too late.
Yeah.
So if you want to know what's happening on the forefront of these issues, you need to ask the people that are on the ground dealing with them.
What was the other one you guys did with space law?
Yes.
That one was a mind blower for me. So you had all these people, because there's all these rocket companies here in Southern California now. You've got not just Elon Musk, I guess he's moved much of it to Texas, but he still has a lot of it here in Southern California, and several other satellite manufacturers or rocket manufacturers whose names escape me now here.
Rocket Lab, Vast, Virgin Galactic.
Galactic, certainly. And all of these companies came together and they talked about one problem that nobody has ever raised. I read a million foreign affairs journals, as I was a foreign policy major in the University of Michigan a million years ago. I never hear anybody talk about space law or the lack thereof. When the laws were written that govern what happens on the moon or Mars or the satellites out in the thing, it was only when nations could build these things and send a few of them up. Now, commercial enterprises, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Virgin Galactic, all these things, they're sending stuff up. What happens if they bump into somebody's satellite? What if they crash into somebody's satellite?
That's exactly why I did that program. So it was like many of our programs, it started at some casual conversation. I think it was a cocktail party for the commercial services office, honestly. Okay. And I met the attorney for VAST. And I hadn't heard of VAST. They're based in Long Beach. And I said, okay, what do you do? And he said, we're sending up the very first private, oh my God, what's the word I'm looking for? Space station. Right?
Oh, private space station.
Private space station. Nice. So okay. My brain being my brain was like, okay, so how does that work? If we are not collaborating with a country, let's say Iran wants to dock, your private company, do you have any say in how that works? Or is it just if you can pay for it, you can come?
If they crash into it, who pays
for it? Well, that's it.
Or what if they get mad and they ram it and they want to get rid of it or something?
If your rocket ship hits my rocket ship, who do I sue? It comes down to that. If I put a flag on something, do I own it? Do I own the minerals within it?
This
who
is what,
claims that?
What Elon Musk is trying to push. He's going to Mars. Is he going to Mars magnanimously for humanity, like he says? Or is he going to plant the Musk flag and have his own a new corporate colony on Mars?
Who knows, Paul? Who knows? But what was great about that is that when I started thinking about it, I found that we had one of the top experts in the world on space law already here. And so in connecting with her and then with these companies, we had this fantastic panel, because space law itself goes back to the 1960s and is very much based on the original maritime law. When we were going out and exploring the seas, okay, you find an island. Who owns it? What are your rights
Plant
to it?
Plant a flag. It's mine now here, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so the idea that we could take law of any kind and make it fascinating was a challenge I was so excited about.
And it was. Everybody was riveted, because the example they gave, part of the things holding back space exploration is all these legal questions. The rocket blows up. Or it hits people on the way down, or it hits something, and mostly in outer space, it hits somebody else's stuff here, either accidentally or intentionally. There really is, it's the Wild West right now. Nobody envisioned any of this stuff. They didn't think there would be so many pieces flying through space put up by private enterprises and private corporations. That wasn't when they drafted these treaties, which were supposed to make space off limits. You can't go claim all these parts of the universe here for your own country here.
Those days are gone.
Well, so this is why you got to go, folks. I'm telling you, it's fascinating stuff. It has real impact on our real lives, our daily lives here, and particularly businesses here in Orange County. Orange County is now, I don't know what the figure is, but what percentage of our economy has got to be based on global export?
Well,
or
I can
import.
Tell you that in Orange County, we have $12 billion of foreign direct investment related wages.
Wow. Wow.
Over 2,000 foreign owned companies in Orange County. 30% of our residents were born elsewhere.
That's what I was going to get to. How many of our residents came from somewhere else? So we are the epicenter of this world trade. Whether you like globalism or not, or whether you want to retreat into an isolationist viewpoint, we're here in Orange County. We've already got, because we're on the Pacific Rim, because we bump up against the two giant ports, LA and Long Beach here, and because of all the cutting edge work that we're doing that's being sold around the world, healthcare, med tech, cybersecurity, all these things, we're in it. So why wouldn't every CEO be at your event? Why wouldn't every business send somebody to listen and learn from the leading voices in the, do I call them foreign affairs community, the world affairs community?
The global community, you want to put it. We bring you the experts. You ask the questions. And we do more than that, too. I would like to stress that we're not just programs. For a long time, we were. But we're getting more and more questions and asking for help on issues like protocol, diplomatic protocol.
That's
and
an
we have the experts
one.
To do that within our network, foreign affairs officers, protocol experts. In fact, one of my employees was the protocol officer for NATO in Brussels for six years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. We have former, of course, sadly, USAID workers, Peace Corps, United Nations, workers of every kind, translators. We have over 22 languages spoken fluently within our membership.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because years ago, did some shows about global trade. We've had done a number through the years. Everybody's trying to figure out, how do I sell my stuff around the world? And there are people like, who I've seen at your events and met at your last open house, Richard Swanson from the Department of Commerce.
Commercial services,
they have
yes.
all this stuff ready that most people don't even know exists. We will help you figure out your market. We'll help you find your trade partners. We'll help you through this whole process, because it helps the country. There's a whole initiative where we're trying to increase not just global trade, but to get more exports, where we sell more of our stuff around the world. Only makes sense. So with all these resources and stuff out there, Americans rush over there and then they screw up because they don't understand the protocol. They mm-hmm. don't understand the niceties. One of them was saying one time that he said, India, there was a trade. You did a show in India too mm-hmm. here. And I remember the guy was there. I think he was on one of our shows. And he said, too many people come back from India and say, I know what it stands for now. India, I'll never do it again. It's so slow. It's so bureaucratic. It's not, go, Americans want over. I'm flying over. I'm here for 24 hours. Let's make a deal. Doesn't work that way in much of the world. They got to get to know you. Okay. They got to develop a relationship. That's a slow process, and we want it to be a speedy thing in and out here.
So. Well, even on simple matters such as talking style, what we're doing right now is a ping pong conversation, back and forth, back and forth. Not every culture does that.
Yeah, see,
and it can be offensive if you do that. And so understanding those nuances are incredibly important. And listen, I have an entire slide that I've used for presentations of international protocol mishaps that happen at the highest level. We're talking heads of state. And it happens all the time. But because of that, you have to be really aware and understand where things can go wrong. Yeah. And I want to talk about what you just said about doing business elsewhere. That also applies to international business wanting to come to Orange County.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact that this has happened where they were greeted inappropriately or not greeted at all, and we lost that opportunity.
Right. They came left offended, and we're like, what did we do? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so I want Orange County to understand that we are a resource, that we can help with that, and we want to help, especially. And this is a topic we have not hit yet, the major sporting events coming to the region in the next 5 years.
I hadn't even thought about that. And we're going to have the whole world descending upon us here.
It's not just the World Cup. It's not just the Olympics. There are some incredible international sports events that are coming here in the next 5 years. And I'm very concerned that we're not prepared for this.
I remember, now I'm considerably older than you are, I'm sorry to say here, but when I went to college at the University of Michigan, studied foreign affairs, I was a foreign policy major, a political science major, and they told us the story of Richard Nixon going to Brazil. And he gets off the plane and he waves his famous, okay, everything's okay, whatever it was here, and not knowing that's an FU signal in the country of Brazil. And so it was front page news, this faux pas of the President of the United States getting off and doing what we thought meant one thing and meant a whole nother thing when you went over there.
George H.W. Bush did the same thing in Australia.
Did he? Even at the highest levels, they sometimes forget or don't get the right advice. So imagine if you're going over to try and do business or welcoming people here. You don't want to inadvertently offend people. I'm told that in Japan, everybody has to present their business card, and partly it's because you got to see who has to bow lower, and there's a certain protocol, or are you bigger than me, and stuff here. And we laugh, and we roll our eyes, and we say, come on, let's just make a deal. It's not that way, and that's what keeps us in trouble all the time. I always said we don't understand the world outside of our own borders, and that gets us in whether war or economic trouble over and over again.
Yes.
So anyway, let's talk about you for a second. Okay. I wanted to start there and we jumped right into the topic here.
I tend to do that.
On your World Affairs Council bio, it says Jane Herring completed her degree in International Studies and Human Rights at Southern Methodist University. Was that a good place to study international studies here?
I love that question because it is interesting how that all began. I happened to be living in Dallas, Texas at the time. I've lived all over the country. I'm originally an East Coaster, New York City. But I was living in Texas at the time.
You strike me like an East Coaster. You're just always in motion and always going and everything.
Yeah. It's not always a good thing, Paul. I need to learn how to relax a little bit. But there's just so much to do.
Yeah.
So much to get done. But when I was living in Texas, it was the Syrian refugee crisis had just happened. And we all have our origin stories. We all have what got us involved in something and made us passionate. And for me, that was it. I'd always been involved and interested in international affairs. I was an exchange student when I was in high school. Always part of my world. I worked internationally when I was in New York. I was always traveling and running delegations.
Did your family support that?
They had no idea what to do with it. No idea.
Like my family. All right.
Where I grew up, most people don't have passports still.
Yeah.
So it was like, what do we do with this child? But I figured it out eventually. And I ended up in Dallas for personal reasons. And I was like, okay, I want to go back to school. I want to learn more about the world so I can make a difference, so I can do something. And then while I was there, SMU did have a great international studies department. I was writing all these papers that you pick a subject, and I was writing about the Rohingya in Myanmar or the Uyghurs in China. And one of my professors...
Look all these up, folks. Yes. She's going pretty fast here. You're going to have to Google some of these here. But these are all international issues of ethnic minorities in different countries.
Yes, right? Yes. And a professor of mine at the time, and because I went to school later in life, these have all remained good friends of mine, said, you do know that we have a human rights program here. And I'd never heard of such a thing.
Wow, yeah.
There, as of the last time I checked, there's only 7 schools in the country where you can
I've
get a degree in human rights. Yes.
Right.
And it's interesting that it is in Dallas, which was much known as the city of hate for a very long time. And we had the assassination.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was less than 100 years ago, you could get postcards with lynchings on them in Dallas, Texas. Yep. It really was that bad. And the people that decided to fund and start the program there said, we will do this, but only if we can address our own issues first. Mm. And so they were able to get the blessing from both the university, which George W. Bush serves on the board there, and the Bush Library is right there on campus. Mm. So we did a lot of events there. Laura Bush went there. It's her library, so to speak. And while I was there, I met with the head of this department, and that was a conversation that changed my life. And I dove right in, and it just so happened that I finished that degree when COVID hit. And so seeing a lot of what we were studying in action and the importance of all of it, but then also why the work we were doing was being demonized, really made me acutely aware of what was happening around the world.
We're back to demonizing again. We've gotten rid of USAID and soft power and helping people, and that's somehow weak and a waste of money and resources.
Apparently. And we did do a whole program on that, which when you have to talk about an issue that can be divisive, that can be controversial,
right,
the importance is learning how to reframe debates in a way that hits the person that's listening. So if the humanitarian side is not something that affects you, maybe the financial part does.
Right.
And so we did an entire program of humanitarian aid as soft power. And we had representatives in global public health, Peace Corps, USAID, speaking about the work that they did. These were career people on the ground, one of whom was on the ground dealing with the Ebola crisis,
right,
in African countries, and understanding the amount of money we save by tackling these issues where they're happening rather than waiting for them to get to our own shores.
So reach people where they're at, whether they're on the left or the right, whether they're conservative and isolationist or whether they're a globalist at heart here, there is some part of the story that may touch them and may get them to think twice about either they support it or they don't support it. That's what I really do appreciate. My biases come through too often here. I'm certainly an old hippie at heart here. But I do appreciate, we try and do it at the station here, streaming, not screaming. If we would learn to talk to each other, even if we disagree with each other, we could get a lot more done.
I can work with anybody who cares. It's the apathy that I feel is the true enemy. Apathy is what frustrates me more than anything in the work that I do.
And I see so much of that, not just in Orange County, but in America in general. When you talk about the world, they roll their eyes. Whether it's my daughter or people I know or friends, or they're like, I got enough problems right here. Why can't we just worry about what's right here? It'd be wonderful if we could, but the world is more interconnected than ever before. And we keep getting examples of this over and over again. A war in Iran is suddenly affecting global economic markets all over the world here.
Everything will eventually affect you. Everything.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to do that in a doom and gloom way or preaching in any kind, but just to raise awareness. So, for example, I am loving how the younger generations are kind of all in on fighting human trafficking, right? Mm-hmm. Becoming
much, big
issue. It's always happened, but it's something that suddenly is on the forefront of minds. And I'm so glad. I will take whatever gets you interested. I will take that and I will work with that.
Right.
But what they're not connecting it with is fast fashion.
Is what?
Fast fashion.
Fast
How much
fashion.
Cheap clothing are you wearing for that you ordered on Facebook, you ordered from Shein or some of these other companies?
That's what got
Who do you think's
Who was the woman
them?
Who was on Kathy Lee with Regis and everything? She was doing all this great work and turned out her clothing was being made in some third world country.
You see it all the time.
Yeah.
But it's
Slave
happening more
labor.
Than ever now. And
right.
It's because it's not as regulated as it was. And regulating gets a really bad rap sometimes. There's a reason for it. You don't know what the working circumstances are. And again, this is not to make you feel bad, but if you care about one issue, you have to understand how it affects everything else.
Or the whole blood diamond issue for years. And
exactly.
So everybody wants a diamond, but what did they have to go to dig that out? And child soldiers that in Africa that were collecting these things and selling these things and stuff.
Here. And understand that cheap is not always cheap for everybody.
Yeah.
There is a cost somewhere, and if you're not paying it, somebody else is.
You have certainly dedicated yourself. After that, though, you went back to New York, and you worked in restaurants. You came out here. You worked in the Taste of Laguna Food and Music Festival. You did a lot of things. You were a special events director for our Pacific Symphony here. None of those sound like you're using your human rights and international studies thing. Did you finally find the place that fits you here?
Oh, yes. Every job I've had has led me here. While I was doing all those jobs, I was on the board of the World Affairs Council. When I lived in Dallas, I worked with that World Affairs Council there.
Which is one of the biggest and best, apparently. Yeah.
It is. It's quite successful because there are a lot of international companies that have their North American headquarters there.
Unlike Orange County, though, yeah.
Correct. I loved living in Dallas. I didn't think I would. I did. But it's a very common saying that the best part of Dallas is the airport. It's easy to get in and out. It's obvious why there's so much international business there. And it's very business friendly, as we know. So even when I was there, Toyota has its North American headquarters there, and they sponsored my studies in Japan. There's always these ways of staying internationally engaged if you want to. And we can help with that. I love working with Orange County students.
You've got two daughters? I met one of your daughters at some event. She looked like she was a teenager of some sort.
Yep. I have. She was at the Space Law Program. She is graduating from Laguna Beach High School shortly, in a few weeks. And I haven't been able to get her to be as globally engaged as I would like, but there's still time.
I can't get my daughter to show any interest in global affairs or whatever here. Dad, I got big enough problems right here at home with my kids and my life and whatnot. I hear that over and over again. Friends, successful CEOs and business people are like, Americans don't seem to be fascinated with, they might want to go travel the world, but they don't necessarily want to understand the world. And they rush over and they think, how much money do you want? We throw money around, or we think we can just throw our weight around and everything's going to fall into line. It doesn't always work then. We've had how many disasters and foreign affairs through the years, from Vietnam up through Afghanistan here, because I don't think we understand what these people are all about. We think they're just like us.
Understanding and connection are just the two most important thing, and that's why I love what I'm doing with the World Affairs Council, what our mission is, what the mission of all the World Affairs Councils is, which is understanding and connecting.
Yeah.
Understanding, you know, what you're experiencing may not be what somebody else is experiencing.
Yeah, exactly.
And what we do here, what you do every day, the choices that you make in Orange County affect the world, and what is happening in the world affects you here. I recently heard somebody say, when Taiwan sneezes, Ukraine gets a cold.
Yeah.
It is very common. Everything is connected. And when you look at it, and I understand it can be too much. I can understand that it can be too overwhelming, too doom and gloom.
Right.
But so that's why I'm trying to find these other ways to reach people in a way that could be fun.
Yeah.
So the sports diplomacy element, understanding that there's an entire part of the State Department that is focused on sports.
Is it really?
Diplomacy.
Oh my goodness.
And in fact, we have someone who has spent their career in the sports diplomacy with the State Department who lives right here in Orange County, and I'm working with her on some programming. And so understanding that there are positive elements of all of this can be very exciting, and I want Orange County to be prepared and excited about this onslaught of global visitors we're about to have. And to be embracing that, because if we do this well, that's 10 years of increased tourism dollars.
Yeah.
Like I said,
what speaks
to people. To me, it's about making human connections, but maybe for you, it's your business.
Investment. Then they'll think, maybe I'll move to Orange County, or maybe I'll send my kids to, I know there's tons of people in China that send their children here to the U.S. to get educated and stuff here. Where do they go? We can be the beneficiary of all those investments, of all those tourism dollars, and of those kinds of connections. I worry about it more than ever because we feel like we're back in moving in an isolationist phase. The heck with the world. Let's just cut off all ties. Let's just pull up the drawbridge and focus here on America. And I get part of that, but it's a naive approach. The world's out there whether we want to worry about it or not here.
Yes, everything we buy, every choice we make in terms of what we do, where we go, is global. Everything. And you don't have to like it, but it is what it is. And but I find it exciting. I always have. I was that weirdo kid that had maps of the world on my wall. You have pop stars, I have maps of the world, right? It's just so I'm very glad that I found this role. And going back to my career, a lot of it was just who was hiring at the time and where could I apply my skill set. But the global element was always a part of my life. That never went away. When I worked in New York City, I was managing delegations all around the world. We were in, I got to meet former Prime Minister of South Africa, F.W. de Klerk, during what? That job. Yes, yes, I know. It's amazing.
These are your pop stars that you got to meet.
You're, totally.
You didn't get to meet some rock star or something here. You got to meet the President of South Africa.
And I will name drop, you know, during my time in New York, I did get to meet David Bowie and Lou Reed and Meryl Streep and all of that. But okay. F.W. de Klerk, Samantha Power,
way
these
up
are my rock stars. Absolutely. No, it's a great opportunity to get that and understand. And whenever I can light that spark in somebody, especially the youth, because like you said, you majored in this, you're interested in this, but what happens is that you end up in the hamster wheel of life, especially in America, where you don't have, you're not forced to have that global engagement.
No. And you got to force that muscle. You got to exercise that interest. Otherwise, it just falls away. We all have interests when we're a kid or when we're in college, and we say, that was fascinating. I loved French poetry or something here. And then later on, that's what I worry about.
I meet people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s even, who said, you know what? I used to be really into that stuff and I don't know what happened.
Yeah, right.
And so that's why we're there. Come in. We have recent retirees who are suddenly reconnecting with the world through
Absolutely.
Our programming and through volunteering with us.
And it seems like you have a lot of young kids. There's always kids passing out brochures.
Oh, that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part. We have, keep in mind, we are a very small nonprofit. We have an annual budget of less than $250,000.
Wow.
We're doing all this programming on a shoestring budget, but we have over 400 applicants every time we open up our non-paid internships.
See?
Because we are the only people in town doing what we're doing.
Yeah, you are.
And they are hungry.
And I
we
think
love it.
To a certain degree, less since you took over the position of running this, what was it, a year or two ago, a couple years ago?
2 years ago, almost
2 years
exactly.
Ago. And it was a big leap of faith because it was an older, I won't say old fogies.
It was a social club, of course.
It was a social club.
And our founders were Henry Segerstrom and John Wayne and Ernie Chapman and Daniel Aldrich. Talk about UCI. Daniel Aldrich was on our original document.
See, there you go.
George Argyros. These were the founders of our organization. It was the who's who of Orange County.
Right.
But it's, and I don't know where that was lost. And I, of course, I would like to get that back. But more importantly, I don't want to be a supper club anymore. And we're not. We're out there.
Yeah, it was kind of a supper club. And then we'll bring a few people in just to give a little talk once in a while. Interesting, but it was.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but we could do so much more. And that's what we're doing now. And the mentoring, we have a former intern that he was an intern for Derek Tran after us, Congressman.
He's we just now, had Derek Tran in here this morning.
Here. Fantastic. He's now getting his master's at Georgetown. It's just amazing to see where these Orange County youth
Derek
end up.
Derek Tran, who talks about his parents were refugees from Vietnam and boat people and coming over here with nothing. And now he's walking the halls of Congress. He said, I just have to pinch myself half the time. How did I get here?
But that's the American dream.
That's the American dream. Sounds like you've found your American dream here. Talk about the event that's coming up. Oh. I know it's already double sold out or whatever here. But it's an example of the powerhouse people that you're bringing in here. You've got the former ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, who teaches up at Stanford, who was somewhat controversial in the role there. When he was ambassador, as he talks about here, but I just saw him on all sorts of national programs. You see him on the talking head programs at night all the
Late
time.
Late night, Daily Show,
very,
he's all over the place.
Very thoughtful,
NPR.
Interesting approach to the world right now. At a time when we're suddenly paying attention to the world because of all these world conflicts going on here.
Sometimes we get lucky because every time we have a program, for the most part, every now and then we have a pop-up that just an opportunity that falls in our lap. And
right.
I never want to say no to those when they happen. An example of that would have been Colonel Alexander Vindman, who was the whistleblower in the first Trump impeachment. Right. He just happened to be in town and we didn't have time to put together a program, but I reached out to some UCI professors. We met on campus with him who happened to be writing a book on whistleblowing. There's always opportunities, but when...
Ripped from the headlines
totally.
Of somebody you get here. Right?
Completely.
Yeah.
And but most of our programming is 6 months in the works. We started planning this event over 6 months ago. And we're working with the Stanford alumni of Orange County. We're working with the UCI Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation. And we're hosting it here on the UCI campus, thanks to collaboration with these programs. But the idea
you're
that
you're held all over different places. There isn't one location you go to.
We try to be as accessible as possible, and that means going to South County, North County, Beach
right.
City, wherever we need to go. But mostly, it's wherever can host us, but we don't have to pay for it
right.
because I don't have the budget to do
right.
it. This happened to work out at a time when suddenly there was renewed interest in what he's talking about, and so the book that he came out with this last year is Autocrats versus Democrats, and
right.
that's small D Democrats, not big D, meaning
right.
it's about democracy, not a political party. Party.
Because we're seeing the world slip into autocracy all over the place. Orban and Putin and Erdogan and Turkey and Xi and Xi and China and all these places.
And that slips down to smaller countries all over the world. This has been happening for a while, but now we're calling attention to it. And you're seeing the long-term effects of this growing while it's been not in our radar, so to speak. Right. The experts, yes, but not the average Americans. And Ambassador McFaul wrote this book, Autocrats versus Democrats, and it's basically about the new global disorder. It's US, China, Russia. And what I'm loving about this book as I'm reading it is he goes back to the very beginning of these relationships. We're talking 1700s US with the czars.
Okay.
We're talking 1700s US with the dynasties.
I didn't think he could draw a line that far back and have it make any sense here.
Oh, he does it. But then he goes all the way to current. He can tell you how many warheads each of these countries has. Who is a real threat? Gosh. What are we hearing that's true and not true? What are we not hearing? And he can go into the detail of these relationships and how they've affected other countries, the missteps, Vietnam, of course, where we've tried to spread democracy, where it didn't work, where it was a mistake, where it did work, and where, you know, the positives as well.
And how we do it. We always bring it in at the point of a gun. Okay, you're all going to do it this way now.
Not always, because you have to think about the power of humanitarian aid as soft power. A lot of that is based on spreading democracy.
Exactly.
And that is why it's so awful that we've cut these programs, because, and he does talk about that, the America First Radio, talking, listening to
Voice
our perspective,
of America,
voice, that's
radio.
What I meant, yes.
Yeah.
Listening to the American perspective on what is happening in the world was a vital part of staying connected for a lot of these other countries
and
that we have now
cut
funding for.
It's how they develop an interest and an appetite for what we call the American dream or the American exceptionalism that brings people to this country. They're in oppressed situations. They're in tough times. And they hear a voice that says there's another way and another place. And maybe it's a magical dream. Maybe it's not all the reality that we hope it is all the time here. But it's enough to pull people in continually to this country. Now, do we want that? I say yes, but that's under question right now, whether we want to pull up the drawbridge and say we're full or whether we only want to let a few in at a time. But to me, that's what made America exceptional. The fact that we took the bottom of the barrel from all over the world, the ones nobody wanted, give me your tired masses yearning to be free, and give them a little freedom, a little opportunity, and a couple of generations later, it's me, it's you, it's all of us here.
And you know,
that's my little soapbox
speech. I agree personally. We do not take sides as a council, of course. But I will say that I have volunteered with the International Rescue Committee before in my career, and it is an absolute fact that the immigrants to the United States will usually put in more to the economy than the average American born person.
So
when you look at the numbers, it is really important that we get them. How we do it, what's legal, what's not legal, all of that is
clearly
got to
control it. You can't just be an open.
It's all nuanced. But we do programming on that, and we'll bring in an immigration attorney, we'll bring in a human rights person, we'll bring in all these different experts from different aspects, national security, to talk about it and discuss it from different perspectives, and you decide.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you how to think, but we can give you the experts to ask questions so that you can make your own informed decision, but that word informed is the crucial
part.
That's
the key, and to get to show an interest, to show up. Get a free meal. Not a free meal, you pay for it, but and they're not that expensive. What do most of your events go for here?
I am working very hard to bring them down through sponsorships, through host partners, as much as possible. It got to the point because the cost of doing events in general, the economy right now, we used to do our programming in hotel ballrooms and Pacific Club, these lovely places,
right.
Golf clubs. I can't charge less than $150 a person if we do that anymore. And that
right.
is not accessible. Maybe you have a couple that wants to attend. Maybe they have to pay a babysitter back home. That's a $500 night.
Exactly.
That is not our mission. Our mission is to reach as many people as possible. So through partnerships and
including those who are just curious, who may not be may not be foreign policy junkies like you and I, but who just say maybe that's something of interest. Maybe I would like to expand and maybe ask a few questions. I read about this. I'd like to hear some other experts tell me what they're seeing out there.
And they are more than welcome. In fact, I love that. I love when I can get somebody that hadn't been paying attention before and
right.
who come in, so I was just curious. You are welcome. You are more than welcome. You are why we are here. Yes, we have the foreign policy experts. We have academics and we have business and every aspect of diplomacy. But we also have people who just care.
Every time I show up, I run into sit at somebody's table and there's just people who are just curious. And I thought, wow, hooray, finally, somebody putting themselves out to cut through the noise and say, let me see if I can ask somebody who actually knows what they're talking about.
And if it's not you, maybe it's the person sitting next to you.
Maybe it's the person sitting next to you.
Curiosity is my favorite part of being human.
Me too.
Learning.
That's what propels this whole station. I'm endlessly curious about what you do and everybody does here in Orange County, and we're always trying to spread these stories. It's a great story. Jane Herring. You can tell she's just, maybe the firecracker is the wrong image. I know she's making a face. She's a force. She's a dynamo. She's in motion. She's constantly going. And she's been a breath of fresh air for this organization and taken it to new levels it should be at and even further, I hope. The McFall thing comes up when? That's already sold out, I guess.
It's sold out multiple times. It is April 17th. It'll be on the UCI campus. But please, if you're interested, even if we can't get you in, please reach out. We will be doing more programming, and we'd love to have you be the first to learn about it.
And what's the next one after that?
We are in a little bit of a pause. We are looking for a new office space right now. We are going to be, we have many programs ready to go, trust me. Right. But we have to make sure the non-fun part of a nonprofit is stabilized, making sure that we have the income that we need, that we have the intern force that we need, that we have an office space. These are all parts, unfortunately, that I also have to deal
with. But people can become members, too. They don't have to just pay to go to an event. That's
correct.
What you're trying to get more. How do they become a member, and what kind of, or corporations could sponsor you? There'd be a noble thing. Put your name on the program and help bring some of these programs to life here. Not just for the community and for your collective organization, but for your own edification. There's a fancy word. For your own knowledge, for your own learning. Because you guys have access to some of the best minds. The people in the front pages, the people on the evening news, they're coming through Orange County because of you.
Thank you. And hope to continue that and keep doing more and more. But we do need the support in order to do it. So yes, sponsorships, corporate memberships, individual memberships, these are all ways of showing Orange County that what we do is important and that you are part of that and you're part of this network. If you, almost everyone we have is the only person in their group of friends that cares about these things. And then when we come together, we're all in it. And we have these incredible discussions and realizations. And you can make a difference. It is not so far away that your choices don't matter. They do. And so come in, get involved, meet us, and let's find ways to work together. I love just, let's meet for a conversation and see where it goes. There are many opportunities, and I'm looking forward to working with more people.
Well, I hope we have more conversations like this. We welcome the opportunity to talk to any of your guests if we have the opportunity to talk to, because you get amazing cohort of people coming through here, and I applaud the work, and I talk about it all the time, and people say, what's that? Never heard of it. I say, oh, you got to go check it out. If you have any interest in not just reading the news, but talking to the people who are making the news, if you really have a concern or a question, or you're just curious, there's a place to go to join other curious people and to find out, to meet these people face to face. I've done events. I come to some of your events whenever I can, and I'll take a photo with one of these people. I'll put it on social media, and people all over the country that I know will say, how did you meet him? How did you meet her? I'm like, World Affairs Council of Orange County.
Come. All are welcome.
All are welcome. All right. A website. How do they find you? How do they reach you?
Somehow we got worldaffairscouncil.org. I don't know how that happened years ago, because there are over 90 councils across the country, but that is our website. You can also just, if you forget the name, just Global Affairs Orange County, you'll find us. I promise. You can also look me up anywhere. I'm happy to engage with you personally. And we just are looking forward to being more relevant and impactful in Orange County and helping wherever we can. And we look forward to doing more.
And people can link in with you or whatever.
Oh, yes. Like LinkedIn is probably our most active.
Now, spell your name, because you have to spell it strangely like everybody else does these days.
I know. J-A-Y-N-E. And then, as my daughter likes to say, herring like the fish.
Okay.
That's the fourth grade daughter.
That's not an appealing image.
I'll take it. Whatever helps people remember.
All right. Jane Herring from the Orange County World Affairs Council, or the World Affairs Council of Orange County. Let's get it right here. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for what you do. And I look forward to participating in the attending more of your events coming up, because it's something everybody should know about and everybody should check out. Thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
There you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every time to hear amazing stories like this one and amazing organizations that you may or may not be aware of, like the World Affairs Council of Orange County, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.